Hey there, and thanks for tuning in to QS Cast. I'm your host, Doug, and each week we talk about the latest news in Magic Finance, buying, selling, trading, and the greatest trends that you can capitalize on to try and play Magic for less. If you're an insider, subscribe to Quiet Speculation, you're hearing this for the day it came out. If you are not an insider, you had to wait a couple days for it to get posted to MTG Cast. So if you'd like to get this cast as soon as it comes out, head on over to quietspeculation.com and see what we're all about. We offer a 111% guarantee on your first month, so if you don't like it, we will pay you. Today we are talking about Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar, and Kelly was there at the event. He was covering it. So we're going to be talking about that, and then we're going to be talking about the state of post-BFZ standard. So, Kelly, tell us, give us the bird's eye view of what it was like to be at the Pro Tour.
First of all, it was amazing, and I owe a big thank you to the Wizards of the Coast PR staff and their event staff for really just making it a great experience. I had my own office next to the event site. They gave me a little press room where I could set up my computers and all sorts of things, and it was under lock and key 24 hours a day. So that was amazing. So I could nip back in there and email you and call you Doug to send out stuff for our insiders. But being there live and, you know, shaking hands with Finkel as soon as he locked top eight and getting to interview Owen Turtenwald and sitting and talking computer programming with Magic Hall of Famer Alan Comer, just so many great people, so many great memories of hanging out with these people in the past came back. But obviously the real highlight was watching the games of Magic played at the highest level and just being surrounded by that many talented, brilliant people. I did some thinking on the plane home as I was constructing my article for this week, and I realized that I may have seen more matches of Magic this weekend than anybody else on Earth, and I'll explain why. If you've ever been to a Pro Tour, what you need to realize is there's sort of it's a big convention hall room, with all sorts of stuff on the periphery, but in the center is a cordoned off area where the matches are going on. You are not allowed in there unless you are a spectator, press, or member of the Wizards of the Coast coverage team. If you're a player and you finish your match, you are asked to leave that area immediately. They want to cut down on team-to-team scouting. Why is that important? Well, I had a press pass, and I was able to stand wherever I wanted. There was nowhere I couldn't go in that corral. So I stood behind people while they were sideboarding and shuffling and fetching. So I could see their entire deck. I could see their entire sideboard. I saw their hands. I saw their game plans. I saw their opponent's hands simultaneously by walking around the other side of the table. And there's, I think, about 250 matches going on, give or take, at any point in time. And each round, I walked between every single one of them and just jotted down notes about what I saw. As press coverage, we are required to agree that we will not divulge team or player information that's identifiable without their prior consent. That's because they don't want me tweeting round one, hey, here's Lou Scott Vargas's entire deck list and sideboard plan. But working within that constraint is very easy to do, as you probably saw this weekend. We were able to deliver a ton of valuable aggregated information that I believe is more useful than saying player X is on deck Y. Reason being is just because, say, LSV is playing a deck doesn't mean it's representative of anything more than LSV and his team's opinion of the metagame. So being able to spectate that many matches at once was amazing, and it was really interesting to see the recurring themes throughout the weekend, which we can talk about in a moment. But overall, I'm really glad that we sent somebody to the Pro Tour. I think we're for sure going to send somebody to the next Pro Tour in Atlanta, and then we'll see about some of the international ones beyond that. It's just a great experience, and I'm real glad I showed up.
Kelly, were there other websites who had sent reporters, or were there other reporters in general?
So I saw that... Not many. The press room was shockingly empty. Like I said, it felt like my personal office. There was a videographer doing a couple of interviews from Gathering Magic. There were a couple of photographers from Japan giggling and taking videos and pictures and stuff. But I didn't see any other non-Wizards press staff there beyond those two.
So the reason why we were able to send you was obviously because we are in a subscription-supported service where our insiders did this, and we got a huge feedback from our insiders saying this was a great idea, do it again. And I'd say to listeners, like, if you're listening and you're an insider to QS, thank you, because you made all that coverage possible. This is what we're spending your subscription on. So if you're subscribing to any magic site, much less a finance site, you should be asking yourself if they're doing things on this level and if they're able to send somebody or if they show any interest in it. Because we are going to be trying everything we can to send people to the next Pro Tours, all of them, Atlanta, Sydney, Madrid. We've got the next year laid out. So you should be asking where your value is going and whether the coverage that you're getting from a site is based on people just watching a stream or whether it's based on having a reporter there. And Kevin, even with the limitations you had, which we followed and we were happy to follow, we got a lot of information out, like what the metagame looked like, what the top tables looked like. I remember you were also following the Team or Dragons deck, where that wasn't even talked about in coverage. It didn't get much camera time at all. And we were keeping an eye on that, and we were looking at how that and Aristocrats were doing at the top tables. And that's something that if people were only watching Twitch or the stream, they never would have found out about that, and they never would have known how well those decks were doing.
Yeah, there was a lot going on that you didn't see on the stream. I mean, one thing you don't get watching Twitch is, you know, the other 249 matches. Not to be glib about that, but I mean, part of what I did was at every round of standard, I walked as many tables as I could. You know, some matches were between games or had just started, so I couldn't get a beat on what they were playing. But at any given time, I was able to observe 30 to 50% of the ongoing matches and make sufficient notes that it was just a completely different experience. I remember when PT Vancouver was going on, I was so frustrated because I just wanted to know more and see more. And I just being limited to whatever scraps Twitter and Twitch were throwing my way, I was like, this is BS. And so when I was at PAX, PAX Prime in Seattle a couple months ago, I talked to a bunch of great people. You know, I talked to Rosewater, Kelly Diggs, but the most interesting connection, reconnection I made was a gentleman at Wizards PR who I had corresponded with a while back. And he was very, very helpful in getting set up for this event.
Chaz, we are reaching a point where, unfortunately, the top decks in Standard, the budget deck, Atarka Red, is nearly $400. The Abzan and Jeskai decks clock in at over $750. If you want to play Green-White Megamorph, you better shell out about that much, too. I know that you wrote about this a little bit this week. Why don't you tell us more about your thoughts on the expensive cost to play Standard, where you see that going, and what alternatives people have?
Well, It's certainly expensive. Standard is definitely a lot more expensive than, you know, where it was even a little while ago. But it kind of, I don't know how long a lot of our listeners have been playing, but I certainly remember playing a while back, and certainly back to the first time Zendikar came around and World Wake, and we were shelling out $100 for Jace the Mind Sculptor. And if you wanted to play Cawblade, you know, it was a $400 base price that you'd have to pay just for Jace, just to play the deck. So, you know, we've had expensive standards before. You know, this is certainly not something that's new. It is expensive right now, and I'm hearing a lot of talk over social media, and I'm being asked this, you know, privately or on social media. You know, why am I paying X amount of dollars for Standard when I can just turn around and, you know, build a Affinity or Merfolk deck and play that, you know, for the foreseeable future in Modern? And that's certainly a valid question, and I wouldn't be opposed to it. I mean, when you look at Standard right now, we're kind of in this perfect storm scenario, the situation where, you know, we have the remnants of the old block cadence kind of not yet gone out of the new block cadence, the way they sort of want to release their sets. So we kind of have this lingering effect of their old cadence, and it's kind of pushing the prices of everything up in standard right now. You have Fetchlands, you have Gideon, you have Jace, you have all these cards, so many cards in the pool right now, and to build a deck, it's really expensive. The good thing is the one reprieve that we're going to have is historically, you know, more often than not, prices tend to go down a little bit after Pro Tour. You know, there's a lot of hype building up to Pro Tour. A lot of people want to play these cards. But, you know, after Pro Tour happens and things are kind of steady eddy, the prices do start going down a bit. And I've even pointed that out in my article right now. Jace is not $80 or $75, contrary to what people want to say. You know, that is a retail price, but you can certainly buy Jace right now as I'm talking for closer to $60, $55 on TCG Player or, you know, Facebook or what have you. So we're already starting to see the kind of effect Pro Tour, you know, post Pro Tour is having on standard. You know, it's kind of cooling down a little bit. But again, I mean, as they're going down, I would start cashing out cards right now. Certainly cards like Jace, Rin's Prodigy, and just overhyped and overinflated standard prices to sort of, if you're just going to prepare for modern or play modern, I mean, I would be doing that now rather than later. You know, again, I touched on this in my article that modern didn't go anywhere. I mean, modern's still a format, didn't just kind of magically disappear. I know the spotlight hasn't been on it because we've had Pro Tour, we've had Battle for Zendikar release, so everything's just kind of been focused on standard. But modern season's kind of just around the corner again, coming up in about March, I think. So that this is the time to get those cards, especially that have been reprinted.
Yeah, I'm going to push back a little bit on like things dropping in price a little bit because, for example, like the winning or the second place Jeskai deck, $750 or I think $850 to build that. If that deck drops in price, if every card in that drops in price by half, we're still looking at over $400, which is unprecedented or hard for me to think of a time when it was that high. You know, still on the high end of a standard deck. Even if everything drops down by 20%, we're still looking at something that could be well over $600 or $700, and that's not just one deck, that's a bunch of them. I mean, do you think that the lack of a real budget option in standard is really going to chill standard attendance?
Well, again, I think you just have to look at standard as where it is right now, and this kind of cool off period, and we talked about this on cast last time that the focus is on cons of Tarkir block right now. Fetchlands, all these kind of cards like Anathenza, Crackling Doom, Mantis Rider, all those cards and cons that you really need to play standard right now. Now, let me preface this that, you know, Dragons and Origins do survive another kind of rotation period, but the cooldown period, at least on the con stuff, will come down a little bit. It's not going to, you know, again, I understand $400 for a standard deck is expensive, but it's not a cost we've never seen before. I mean, I was just telling you, you know, I can remember back to World Wake where even if you were paying $80 for a Jace the Mind Sculptor, you know, that's still close to $400 worth of Jace the Mind Sculptor that you're paying up front, and that's not even accounting for Sword of War and Peace, Sword of Feast and Famine, Gideon back in its heyday. I mean, standard has been expensive before. I mean, this is nothing that we haven't seen before, but as cons and Fate Reforged rotate out, and then Origin starts to get close to rotation, all these factors are going to start eliminating, and BIOS are going to go down, which kind of drives down the retail price of stuff, because vendors don't want to be stuck with a bunch of KTK stuff, so they're going to drastically decrease their BIOS prices, and then if the same is going to happen with Origins. The good news is we don't really know. I mean, we had Modern States come in, and I kind of looked at those numbers and deck lists a little bit just to kind of get a sense of where, you know, what's a good observation to take away from States. And a couple of the good things are I didn't see a lot of Jace Vryn's Prodigy, so maybe that's not a card that you should be holding on to, because it's not going to be the $50, $60 card that we're looking at right now, because it's just not being played in Modern as much. So that's going to considerably bring down the price. Not completely, but enough that it's manageable, and because it's not it's not going to maintain its dominance in other Eternal formats enough to warrant a $60 price tag. So a lot of what's going on is because Standard is kind of in this perfect storm, and doing a lot of the heavy lifting, I should say, on even stuff like fetches, again, Jace, and what have you.
Kelly, you got a chance to see a lot of what got played, but I also want to ask you that compelling question. What didn't show up? And when you bring up that list, I want our listeners to be paying a lot of attention, because these are the sorts of cards that if you're holding them, you should be dumping them now.
Sure. It's hard to observe what isn't there, but I tried to remember the cards I was looking out for, and some of it really surprised me. Oblivion Sower literally didn't see a single copy. Now, when I say I didn't see one, I mean I did not, with my own two eyes, observe a pro player buying or playing with that card. It may have happened, I didn't see it, and I saw a lot. So I didn't see any Oblivion Sowers. I didn't see any Drana, Liberator of Malakir. I didn't see any Undergrowth Champions. I was about to stutter and say Woodland Wanderer, but I did see some of those. I also interviewed some pros, asking about some of their favorite and underrated cards. None of them mentioned any of these cards as, like, cards I don't want to play against, cards I want to play with, cards that overperformed in testing, things like that. What else? See the Unwritten, which had a precipitous buy list price drop very recently, which really frustrates me, because I was sitting on a stack of them, and I really did believe in that. I really believed in that card, but it just completely, totally blanked. So I'm considering selling mine at a significant loss just to close the position out, because I don't think they have any upside at this point. And buy prices have dropped even since I looked yesterday. So those are the big ones. Obnixilus, I thought, would be missing in action, but he was actually fairly prevalent. I think that's about it. Any cards that you're curious about?
Obnixilus was the one that came to mind, but like you had said, it shows up as a one or two of in a lot of places.
And weirdly, it showed up, even if it's a one or two of, I saw him a lot. Which means that when people drew him, they played him, and it impacted the board. Because he was on the board a lot. And, you know, with his high loyalty, I'm not surprised at all to see that. Like, I remember Chapin was playing, I think almost every deck that was like a control-ish deck with black in it was trying a couple. A couple pros said that it was one of their favorite cards in the set because it's super powerful and a really cool card. So he's one that I definitely have an eye on. But, I sold off my Undergrowth Champions, after the Pro Tour just cause, like, they may have room to grow at some point, but if they're not good enough now while Fetchlands are in Standard, and Fetchlands will only be in Standard for another 5 or 6 months, if I recall, if they're not good enough now, when Fetchlands rotate, they're definitely not going to be good enough. And I talked to Hall of Famer Alan Comer about this, and he was like, you know, that these decks, these red-green decks with the Landfall and the Fetchlands are certainly skewing the format. And I think that when the fetch lands rotate, people aren't really fully grasping how drastically the format is going to change. And he actually offered to write an article about it for us, so I need to follow up and see if that's actually going to happen. But having a Hall of Famer write an article for QS would be pretty cool.
Absolutely. Alan Comer, the inventor of Turbo Xerox, which grew into the Grow deck, which turned into Miracle-Grow, which turned to every single cantrip and tempo-based strategy we know of, would be pretty fun.
Yeah, he's a really interesting, really smart guy. Went to college at the age of 13. So he's an actual genius. I felt dumb in his presence.
Absolutely. Not on the outside of the realm of possibility for a Magic player either.
Oh, no. I think that I covered the main cards that I expected to see, but I didn't. If I think of any more, I'll let you know. But yeah, it was really about what showed up, which is Gideon and Jace everywhere. Mantis Rider is a format-defining card. Like we've been saying for the last year. Oh my goodness, can I just rant for about 2 minutes? This is why, oh my god, this is why you pay too much money to play Magic. This is why your wife or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your partner or your dog is like, why are you spending all your money on Magic? It's because you don't buy Mantis Riders in 2014, you buy them in 2015. That's what the problem is. Everyone's like, oh man, I wish I got my Mantis Riders when they were less. Like, well, okay, you could have gotten them for 50 cents all day long for the last year. Like, why didn't you buy a playset for yourself? Because how are you going to look at this card and go, oh, I might not play this card. Yes, you're going to play this card. It's a 3-3 flying Vigilance and Haste for 3. Oh, man, Mana Base might suck. No, it's one of the best cards ever printed. You should buy 100 of them if you can afford it. You should buy 1,000.
Yeah, you know, I have a limited amount of pity for people who missed out on Polluted Delta or Flooded Strand, figuring that they would be all colors forever.
Yeah, don't right? even. I don't even. No, you know what? I have a threshold, okay? And I would consider myself a pretty laid-back guy. And I understand a lot of the frustration that players, you know, starting off and even older players, you know, at times. And I could take frustration to a degree. But, yeah, I mean, I just don't understand the complaint. I mean, what were you thinking? I mean, like, you get presented a reprint in front of you. Why don't you just buy it then? Like, did you really think, like, cons of Fetchlands are just going to be $10 forever? I mean, I don't understand. There's like twice as many people now that there were the first time, almost three times. I think we're at, like, what, 14 million or something like that from 20, the last
20
okay, million time, people?
Pause. Time out. So when you go to the Wizards of the Coast events as press, they give you a nice little printed spiral bound booklet that tells you everything you ever needed to know about everything. And in that press booklet, which I don't have in front of me, I can tell you the figure that popped out at me like a sore thumb was 20 million Magic players worldwide. Last I checked, it was 12 or 13. But like, goodness, people, I don't care if cons is the most open set in the history of Magic. When there's twice as many people buying Magic cards, it better be the most open set in history, and there probably still aren't enough cards. Because guess what? Mantis Rider, let's see, September, buy list, retail, $1.25, now $3. Obvious, but no one acted on it. Crackling Doom, same darn problem. Fetchlands, hello? Like, wake up, people. This is why you pay too much for Magic, because it's not obvious until 10 people on the same side are like, hey guys, obviously pick these up, and then, you know, we have skin in this game too. We don't make any money by telling you to buy cards. Because we don't sell cards, you know, we don't have that problem of like, we just want to hype everything. We make money by being right. We make money by making you money, by keeping Magic affordable. So, like, I'm gonna stop ranting now because my blood pressure is starting to rise and I'm starting to sweat a little bit.
Yeah, you know, like, what? You hit on a really good point. And what I try to tell people all the time is, you know, people want to kind of demonize this kind of MTG price or finance, hashtag or whatever, this kind of entity that we are, is, you know, people that want to just always buy cards and turn a profit on. That's not always true. I mean, there's one thing.
In my experience, it's rarely true. I think most people are just trying to keep the costs of Magic down. I can tell you the number of our subscribers, like, we're going to let a little bit from out from behind the scenes here. Like, we asked our subscribers, like, why are you active in Magic, I don't even want to use the word finance, because it's got a connotation. Why do you trade and buy and sell Magic cards, like, more so than, like, just get what you need? And they're like, well, I just don't want to, I want to break even. I want to free roll Magic. And, like, that's all most people want to do. There's only a tiny percentage of our subscribers that want to make, like, this into a job. Most people just want to, like, get their wife or their husband or whatever off their back and, like, break even and maybe have some beer money to spare. That's it.
Yeah, and again, like you just said, I mean, it's not always about speculation and buy this card now and it'll be $20 later. A lot of the advice that goes out is exactly what you said, Doug, exactly what you said, Kelly. I mean, when Dragons of Tarkir hit, and I'm looking at it right now, you could have been buying Polluted Deltas for $13, half of what they're worth right now, half, fit, like straight up half of what they're worth. And this is the kind of information that we are trying to tell people. And I just find it so, like, so frustrating after enough, you know, after enough of hearing of it. I don't want to hear it anymore. I don't want to hear the complaining that, you know, there's polluted deltas are $25. Like, what did you actually think was going to happen? 20 million people, a lot more people are buying Magic cards these days. Everyone wants fetch lands. They want fetch lands not only for Standard, but they want them for Modern. I mean, these are just the kind of things that you have to act on. I know $13, I mean, is not super cheap in terms of a card, you know, a cardboard, piece of cardboard, but if you want it, just buy them when they get reprinted. That's when they're the lowest point they're going to be.
I mean, let me talk through the price graph here, all right? Fetchlands come out, polluted delta, retails for 20, buy lists for 16. Okay? By that, and that's just end of September. By November the 1st, retails down to 15, buy lists down to 10. We get a little bump to retail 17, buy lists 11, mid-January, and then by mid-March, retail's down to 13, buy list is down to 7. At that point, fetchlands go up, 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 up gradually until June, then up a little less gradually until August, and then on August 5th, the retail price spikes from 18 to 24. Like, I mean, you could have been buying these things, if you're savvy, for $10, $11. There's just no excuse for looking at this card like at historical bottom.
Guys, it's hard to do that if you're doing it alone. Also, like it's hard to do this without being able to bounce your ideas off other people or read other people's thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. Right.
If you're interested in playing for less, join a community. It doesn't have to be QS, although we've got a pretty good one, but find a community of people, even a local Facebook Magic group, and talk to people who you trust, who you know are able to do this and pick up stuff for cheap, and learn from them and bounce your ideas off of them. Because, I as much as I want to rag on people for not picking a polluted delta at $13, it's like, on the other hand, I understand, because you don't have the pressure of somebody being like, well, wait, how long do you think these are only going to be $13? Do you think these are going to be this price forever? No. Get real.
Yeah. So we have a great community, by the way. But, yeah, I agree. It is hard. And I understand. And I was there. I mean, I started playing this game when I was 13 years old. I mean, I couldn't probably tell you how many terrible trades I've done over the course of my life, especially in the early days. And just not caring about my cards as much as I do now, and or really caring about value and stuff as I do now. And there's a first time for everyone, but I would have to say if you're entering the game at this point, and this is really the only concern I have for people who are actually complaining about prices. The people who are first entering the game, that's a legitimate concern. I understand that. A person who's just coming into Magic the Gathering, okay, I want to play Standard. Wow, holy crap. You know, a Standard deck's $800. That's, like,
play a Tarker, you know, play a Tarker Red. Do what I did when I got back into Magic. Build the cheapest deck possible that still wins games, and just play it until you're perfect with it. And you'll beat all the players who don't know how to use Jace right because they net decked it and didn't practice. But still, the point remains accurate.
I just don't – I mean, not to say, like, you know – everyone has to kind of go through this trial by fire, but there is a kind of curve of when, you know, you start learning the game more, you start being more integrated with the actual numbers of this game and the finance part of this game. I mean, that has been interwoven with this game for as long as the game has been a game. I mean, it's just part of the market, is a part of the game. It's a trading card game. It's always going to be a part of the card game, especially, you know, even it might change a little bit when we go to these kind of two block cadence and stuff. It'll change as it goes along, but it's always going to be a part of the game. So, you know, there is a kind of trial by fire when you enter this game that you're going to have to go through. And, you know, it's not any different than any of us has gone through. So I just don't understand. I mean,
I completely agree. And another point to make is, remember, this two-block thing changes everything, literally everything. Cons is rotating out in 6 months. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people are going to get caught unawares with that. Like, people are going to be like, oh my god, why did all my cards suddenly have in value? Because the rotation is going to come a lot sooner than most people think. So, the relief is in sight. In April, standard decks are going to cost $150, $200 less because fetch lands will be gone. And I do not think that those Tango lands are going to reach anywhere near the same height. They're just not that good without fetch lands.
No, absolutely not.
With fetch lands, they're the craziest. But, like, without them, yeah, whatever.
So, last thing before we go, wrapping up our extended rants and looking back, let's look forward here and talk about what we think are good pickups moving forward. So, let's hit our readers with a few tips. And first, the card that I was thinking of was Pia and Kieran Nalar, who are Chandra's parents. Bring it up. It's about 75 cents right now, but I think you could probably trade for these at near bulk levels. I bring it up because they were played in some very high-placing Jeskai decks that didn't end up top-8ing but still got some notice. And it's an interesting card. It is like the world's worst Siege Gang commander, but I think at this stage I'm fine with bad Siege Gang commanders too. Being able to throw 4 damage out is pretty good, and also being able to make 4 power worth of stuff for 4 mana is kind of ornery. So that's my pick for a nice-looking card going forward if you're just looking for something to trade from. And, Kelly, I know that you have a whole bunch of other Origins cards that you thought of. Give me a few highlights.
Speaking of the Nalar family, Chandra the Flip Planeswalker is very inexpensive right now and probably only getting cheaper. I picked up a couple with store credit because I needed to have them in stock, but I think you could maybe wait another couple weeks or a month. Origins cards are going to be disproportionately in short supply.
And as a price check on her, by the way, she's about $8.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a little pricey. I'd like to be closer to $5, but I'll take what I can get. Who was it that I interviewed? Stefan Berrios, a Chicago player who top 4 or top 8 of the last Pro Tour, a recent Pro Tour. When I interviewed him, he was like, all the Flip Planeswalkers are good. Not just Jace, because the main issue is that other Planeswalkers, when you cast them, you have to protect them from combat. These, you don't. I mean, if they eat removal, they eat removal, but with that endorsement, looking at something like Chandra, I think she's got all the potential in the world. She's powerful, she's not too much to cast, she's one of the cheaper ones. Kithian, I'm less convinced that he's great, because attacking with 3 creatures is a lot harder than like doing damage with a red deck. Other red cards I like in Origins, I don't like to recommend cards that are already expensive or have already spiked, but I like Abbot of Carol Keep. I just picked up a couple more for my standard stock. Doug, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're floating around the $6 to $8 mark right now, depending on where you check. That card is a staple. It's going to be a staple forever. The card's so stupidly good for 2 mana. I mean, just watching people play it, it just leads to lines of play where you just throw your hand against your head and you're like, well, I guess that's amazing. Like, red decks hitting their 3rd land drop for free. Forget Team or Battle Rage and all that shenanigans, because that's gone in 6 months. But, like, Abbott's going to be with us for at least another year, maybe more. And that card is the real deal. I want to say Hangerback Walker, but it takes more balls than I have to be like, yep, go buy this $15 rare from Origins. But I don't know. I haven't played enough Modern. Chaz, maybe you can chime in on the Modern front, but like, that Hangerback Walker is probably one of the best Magic cards ever made. And it's in a set that wasn't open very much, and it's going to be a standard for a long time, and I think it's going to be in Modern as well. What are your thoughts on that, Chaz?
Yeah. I mean, when you say, like, go and buy your Hangerback Walkers at whatever they are right now, I think they're, like, $13 to $15 or something like that. That's not, I don't feel like that's, I feel like that's good advice, when you look at it as, you know, buy them in anticipation that they're going to be $30 at some point. I think when you look at it and when you want to buy it, it's just because it's not one of those cards that are going to be $5. You know, like, it's not going to go down so much that you're buying them and you're going to eat a huge loss on each one of these cards, because you're right. I mean, it is good enough to see play in Modern. It's still in Standard for a long time. Gets played in Vintage and you know, whatever else. I do think it has some room to fall once it leaves standard. I think it's
that's a year away.
Yeah, exactly. No, but that's exactly a year away. So again, you're not going to lose that much buying them to play, certainly, and to continue playing them in other formats. So it's just not one of those cards that's going to end up being, you know, a near bulk card. It's just not.
No,
it's too powerful.
If you're playing standard and you don't have them, I think anticipating that getting any cheaper is unwise. Like, the event deck didn't really do a whole lot to kill their price, and if that's the case, I mean, you know, if that can't kill the price, they're not going to reprint it again so soon. And like, at some point, they're just going to have to look at it and be like, "Well, I guess it is what it is. We printed this insanely good Magic card, and I'm just going to have to live with those consequences."
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, when you just look at some of the numbers that, you know, Hangerback Walker is seeing play in Standard specifically, I mean, it's just like you said, you should just, if you're going to play Standard and you need Hangerback Walker, there's really not a big deal buying them now to play. I mean, you have a long time. They're not going to drop so much that you're going to really be shooting yourself in the foot and, you know, asking yourself why you bought this $15 card. It's not going to be a $2 card at some point. I mean, when you have 210 copies of Hangerback Walker in Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar, which is 60 copies more of the next played card, which was Jace, I think that's kind of telling you something. So
that means that if, assuming every deck played four, right, there's about 400 people invited to the Pro Tour. That's one Hangerback for every two people. That means one in eight players was playing a playset of Hangerbacks, I believe the math works out to be.
So, I mean, you just have to kind of delve a little deeper and kind of look at the numbers a little bit too. So, I mean, it was in 55% of recorded decks.
Wow.
That's a big percentage, and it drastically comes down with Jace to 39%. So, again, I mean, some of the finance, advice that we give out is not just, hey, buy Hangerback Walker at 15 because it's going to be a $35 card. No, it's to buy Hangerback Walker at 15 because it just got reprinted. It got lowered by the event deck. So now is a really good time to buy it if you want to play it. Same thing with
the fetch lands. It's not like it's, you're not trying to double up on it. You're not trying to make money on it. You're trying to make sure that when you want to play them, you don't have to pay more for them than you need to. I mean, the best time to buy Hangerback Walker was before the last Pro Tour, not the one that just passed, but like the second best time is now, because I just don't see any catalyst rendering them cheaper unless there's like some sort of like stupid one mana exiled target Hangerback Walker card.
I mean, it played through multiple copies of Silk Wrap. I think it's fine. I mean, I think it's not going anywhere. Even, you know, Silk Wrap's going to be around for a long time. It's obviously resilient enough to play through Silk Wrap. So I think, like you said, I mean, everything that we said, it's fine.
I want to give props to Doug for when we were doing our early testing of BFZ Standard. I checked our deck list archive, and I saw that he had cloned one of my Abzan decks and replaced my Stasis Snares with Silk Wraps, at which point I didn't know Silk Wrap existed. I kind of have like a mental fog around Dragons of Tarkir block for some
reason.
You're
welcome for that one.
Yeah, no, for real. That was big. I saw that and I was like, oh, that's pretty clever there, Dougie. So I picked up a number of copies in advance of the Pro Tour because of that and other assorted reasons. And by the way, that card is now buy listing for something like 80 cents when you could have bought them for dimes and quarters for the last...
I think there was like...
That month?
There was plenty of sellers on TCG Player that morning. They were going for like 18 cents. So,
yeah. I mean, that's. I'm actually starting to come around to the idea of buying uncommons. I'm sitting on 150 Silumgar Scorns right now because I can't imagine that once the format slows down. I really want to make a Grixis Dragons control deck once the format slows down because you've got Foul Tongue, Draconic Roar, Silumgar's Scorn. I mean, you've got some of the best spells available in that dragon shell. So
Yeah.
Which actually also brings me to one pick from Dragons, is I like Kolaghan the Storm, or sorry, from Fate Reforged, for a short-term play, is Kolaghan the Storm's Fury. You might be able to get them in near bulk, you might end up paying like 50 cents for them, I just bought about 50. After seeing them in, token-based decks, the card has a tremendous amount of power, and because of the strength of all those Dragons of Tarkir, Dragon Kicker spells, I think he's a very important card around that strategy. So,
yeah.
So I might miss. I'm okay.
I want to dip back to Silk Wrap, by the way, just for one second. October 18th, our historical prices on Quiet Speculation with Trader Tools. The retail price is 48 cents. The buy list price is 5 cents. The very next day, buy list price jumps to 50 cents in retail price. So you can see that's where the buy list and the retail price inverted in one day. And I'm looking at the chart, and it is just flat, flat, flat. We don't even have buy list information because it wasn't getting listed on buy lists. That's one of those occasions where if you had identified, like we had a long time, like weeks and weeks ago, that Silk Wrap was going to be a big deal card. And you could have picked this up by reading a Craig Wesco article, too. You didn't even have to find this at QS, but you could have picked up that that would have been a big uncommon. And now you could have bought things for 20 cents and then flipped them for 70 cents.
I mean, so. Kelly's email that I think his first email that went out was like at 2 a.m. or something like that. And if you woke up and read his email, Silk Wrap was right there in front of you. So, I mean, it was just really good coverage, Kelly. Just a couple of last points before I stop talking. To go to Pinot Kira Noir, I like that card. I don't know how much movement it's going to – I don't know, like, how – much it has to grow, but I think it's a good buy list play, especially because the Zulaport decks, the Aristocrat decks, they didn't make top eight, but they did have a good conversion rate from day one to day two. They did post up some good finishes, and those decks are going to be around for a while,
They survived for a while because
you have Nintuko House, you have Zulapur Cutthroat, and I have seen on some daily lists, they have these mono black, they have Collected Company, they have Blue Black Aristocrats, but I have seen some versions of Mardu or Blue Black or Blue Red or Red Black, sorry, Aristocrats that have featured Pinot Kira Noir. Because for four mana, you're getting three bodies, and that's exactly what that deck is aiming towards.
Yeah. I like the Whirler Rogue tech because it lets you push your husks through, but Paya and Kieran Millar give you a different way to attack the format as opposed to going all in on a creature that's just going to get eaten by a removal spell.
Yeah.
You can start flinging artifacts. Now, I think that there's a lot of ways to build that deck, and then when the fetch lands rotate out, when the format loses Temur, Battle Rage, and become immense. That the entire Atarka Red shell like that, that Damars crushed the world with 3 weeks ago, is just gone after rotation, and I think that depending on what we see in the next sets, I think Alan Comer is spot on when he says, that the format is going to get massively slower as a result.
Yeah,
so,
couple last points. I talked about this in my article. It isn't just Origin, so we are coming up on Modern season again, and I just kind of listed out quickly a bunch of cards that I saw that are still just as played as they were before Modern Masters. They're still seeing a ton of play in Modern, and the Modern Masters reprint is not going to keep these cards down forever. So just right off the bat, or just to rattle off a couple cards, Dark Confidant is coming back in a huge way with the Dig Through Time ban. Fulminator Mage, Spellskite, Splinter Twin, Noble Hierarch, Reman, Snapcaster Mage is now buy listing for $43, so a good chance, even with the reprint, the RPTQ reprint, still a good time to pick those up because, those RPTQ reprints don't really affect the price that much, as we've seen with cards like Liliana.
Oh. Snapcaster Mage is actually buy list wise up a little bit since over the last month. I remember that they were buy listing in the 30s. Now they're in the 40s, despite the promo. Love the new art, by the way. Love the athletic dude with the dreadlocks. That's just super cool art. If you hate it, send me your Snapcasters. I'll take them.
So those cards, again, they're not flashy, they're not speculative, but sometimes you have to look at the cards that are right in front of you that are still seeing a ton of play. I mean, Fulminator Mage is still one of the top 10 creatures played in Modern, so that card's not going anywhere anytime soon. And you could be picking those up right now at like $15.
Well, guys, we have gone over a lot of stuff today. There's definitely a lot for our listeners to work on. So thank you for joining me this week. Thank you, listeners. Thank you to our co-hosts. And until next week, I am Doug.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Chaz.
And you've been listening to QS Cast.